Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
This is something the Christians need to really be aware of, the many, many propaganda techniques that are utilized against us. And deflection is one of the most important.
Everywhere I went talking to people, every one of them said that if people in the West are not willing to die for their faith, then they're not going to withstand what's coming.
Saying the truth about your sin and yourself, that you're not righteous, that you're not good, that you are a sinner, that you are in need of God's mercy and grace, that's a biblical way of being authentic before God.
To say, "Thus says the Lord," is actually an act of humility, because it gives the glory and the deference to Him, to His word.
Farmers in South Dakota, listen to issuesetc.org while combining our corn and feeding the world.
What are we witnessing when in our society we are asked to not only believe things that are patently impossible, like a man can become a woman or vice versa, but not only believe them, but to affirm them and to go along with them? And even if we don't believe it, we still have to say we believe it or act like we believe it. What are we witnessing there? Isn't it fundamentally a war on reality, on the real, on ultimately the ground of being for all reality, God Himself? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Columbus Day, October the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll spend today's first hour talking with Dr. Anthony Esselin about that war on reality. Then, in hour two, we will be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary, discussing Jesus' admonition to pay taxes to Caesar. Our guest will be Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Joining us to talk about the war on reality, Dr. Anthony Esselin. He's professor and writer in residence at Magdalen College of the Liberal Arts, senior editor of Touchstone Magazine, author of several books, including his latest, Sex and the Unreal City, The Demolition of the Western Mind. Dr. Esselin, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks. It's great to be back here.
What do you mean by unreality?
Well, mankind has never had a very sure hold upon reality. I think it's John Calvin who said that the imagination of man is a factory of idols, right? We're always in danger of veering off into insanity, worshiping stocks and stones and things like that. But in our time, it's reached proportions that it could never have reached before, because we're wealthy enough now that we don't have the salutary effects of the natural world around us to keep us at least somewhat rooted in the real. We can live completely in a fantasy land and not die over the winter because we haven't gotten the hay in for the cattle and the grain in for ourselves. I'll give you an example of this sort of thing, right? I mean, especially with regard to sex, we are completely insane right now. I am to believe simultaneously that there are no important differences between man and woman, even though there are countless differences, and we immediately recognize man for a man and a woman for a woman anywhere we go in the world, right? But I'm supposed to pretend that there are no differences. So that's already one foray into unreality. But then I'm supposed to believe at the same time that a person over here can be a woman in a man's body, or that there can be a man in a woman's body. And of course, those two things put together not only are unreal, they could not conceivably be real at the same time in any universe, in any imaginable world, okay? But we permit it because our grasp upon the real is very tentative these days. Not even tentative, it's just slight. We don't even care about the real world. We live completely in political and sexual fantasies.
Why can't we get enough of this unreality?
Why can't we get enough of it? Well, go back to that factory of idols again, right? I've written in various places that when mankind shoves God from off his throne, or tries to, he invariably turns to one of the three big things that are nearby to worship instead. and those would be the thing that most attracts him, that that has the most powerful influence upon his emotions, that would be sex. Or the thing that he has created, the Leviathan that he has made and that subjugates him, and he's sometimes glad to be subjugated, and that would be the state. Or the thing that's nearest to him and looms largest in his own imagination, which is himself. So it's sex, self, and state. And once you've given yourself over to these idols, and they often go together, it's the old cycle of sin and error. You miss the right path, and instead of saying, you know what, I better take stock of myself here and get back on the road, you keep going down that same road, lest you have to repent, because repenting is hard. And the further you go down the road, the less it satisfies. So the more you need, and the more you need, the further you stray, and the less it satisfies, and so on. It's a kind of ongoing journey right down into hell.
Can well-intentioned secularists be our allies in returning to reality?
Oh, boy. Hardly. There are some, okay? I think of, actually, she's a friend of our chaplain up here at Magdalen College. I think of Christina Hoff Summers, for instance. I believe that she is not any kind of a Christian. She's a secular person at Clark University, but she's written very powerfully in the last 20 years about the war on boys. She has a sane and realistic view of what the sexes are, what they can do, how they are for each other. People like that can be of great help when they do good scholarship. But, you know, it's going to be harder and harder to depend upon them, because politics is everywhere we turn, and once people get the politics bug under the skin, you can almost forget that, you can write them off as going to be of any help.
You say that we believe that our words can somehow alter reality. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's really bizarre. I think that in previous generations, as I said a little bit earlier, people could not go as far into unreality, as far into the fantasy land of that idol factory, the mind, the imagination, the corrupted imagination of man. They couldn't go that far because they always had to be brought back by physical necessities. Most human beings in my grandparents' generation knew what it was like to do very difficult physical labor, right? My grandfathers went down the coal mines. You know, everybody kept at least a kitchen garden, so they had to dig the earth, you know. People built their own houses. You had to do these sort of things just to survive from one year to the next. But that's no longer the case. That's no longer the case. And so we pretend that the various realities around us are what these very foolish academics call socially constructed, meaning completely arbitrary. So that if you have this one society over here where, let's say, boys are expected as part of their natural behavior to be boisterous and somewhat mischievous and energetic, active, as if they had ants in their pants, right? And that they would grow up to be, you know, rather strong and sometimes in a bad sense, self-willed, but otherwise having a certain desire to put a mark on the world. This is just a matter of upbringing and nothing else. We can change things utterly by just saying so. We say, you know, well boys aren't like that. We've only made them be like that. We can change our language and they won't be like that anymore. Change our language and a couple of habits and they'll be completely different. And such people have almost no knowledge of human cultures. The terrible anthropologists. Go any place in the world and you'll find these realities. But now we, again, because survival is not a dire need. It's not urgent for us to be rooted in God's created order just to live the next year. We can pretend. We can live in these fantasy lands.
How is a belief in reality, as you say, a corollary to belief in the Trinity?
Okay, well, boy, we can talk about that for a whole hour. Christians, I think, have forgotten that the Trinity is maybe the fatherhood of God, the Trinity, three-person God, and the incarnation of the second person of the Trinity, the incarnation of the Word. These are the fundamental beliefs of all Christians. They've lost their hold on them. And if it is true, right, if, as we believe, as we say we believe, if it is true that God who made this world is one God in three persons, it is not just some little extra thing on the side that we happen to posit about God. There's profound implications there for how we view the reality, the created world that God made. Okay? One of the things, for instance, that concentration upon the Trinity might bring back to Christians is that, and here I'm going to do a little bit of a foray into anthropology. A human being made in the image and likeness of God is made in the image and likeness of the three-person God. To think of that human being as an atom, A-T-O-M, of self-will, an atom of desire, an individual, okay, in a severe sense, that is, I am me, and there's no necessary connection between me and anybody else, right? To view the human being that way, whether you're on the left or the right, is to radically misunderstand what the heck a human being is, okay? It's to get everything wrong, right at the root. So, for instance, individualists of the left who think of human beings in a truncated way, as if they were just these little molecules of self-will, they want to believe that each individual can make himself or herself whatever sexually they want to be, or perhaps whatever politically they want to be. And that's nonsense. That's a lie. It gets us wrong. And perhaps some people on the libertarian right want to believe that the individual has no duties towards others, natural duties, that in fact that the person is only a full person when those duties are recognized and taken up and cheerfully performed. So they both get it wrong, but the implications for us are profound. I don't want to hear about how, for instance, you can't legislate morality. That's nonsense. You have to. Human beings living in any society are human beings living with each other and for each other. And that means, Sean Dunn said, no man lives on an island. That's not what human beings are. What else would we legislate, if not in one fashion or another, how we are to live together? What is good for us? What is good for one another? And our politics is individualistic, and we've lost all sense of what the heck we even have political institutions at all for. We've certainly lost our hold on the fundamental natural institution, which is the family. Now it's just the home is not a home, but a flop house where individuals who don't have a whole lot to do with each other happen to sleep for a while.
Is that rejection of the Trinity as not only a creator, but really ground of being, related to what we discussed a few minutes ago, our need to somehow, or our belief that we can shape our reality with our words and ideas?
Yeah. You know what? It's kind of like, it's as if we deny at the root the Word that was in the beginning with God and was God, the Word through whom all things were made. And we replace it with our words. And our words are arbitrary. They're entirely up to our wills. Okay? So there is no order in the universe other than a kind of base materialistic order. Obviously, nobody is denying, I suppose, nobody is crazy enough to deny that there are such things as atoms and molecules. But we deny that there's any real order beyond that. So we reject the things that were made by the Word, so that we can reject the Word, and we can put our Word in place of the Word, and our words are whatever we feel like having them be. And, of course, this leads almost immediately to insanity. We can't make reality by just saying so, by a fiat. We can't make human reality just by saying so. It's really profoundly ungrateful, too. The attitude looks upon the world around us as either indifferent or inert or bad, and says, you know what, we're just going to make this world whatever we want it to be, instead of accepting this world with gratitude and submitting to reality and working within reality, whether it's human reality, moral reality, even natural reality of the physical world around us, and flourishing that way. So we have cities now that aren't real cities, neighborhoods that aren't real neighborhoods, homes that aren't real homes, but just buildings, and human beings that have lost whole dimensions of what it means to be human. And none of it is satisfying. We're very angry. We almost can't speak to each other anymore. And yet the solution, which would be to turn back to the created order and the Creator, we don't want to do that because that means that we'd have to change our lives. And that'd be too difficult. That would hurt.
We're talking with Dr. Anthony Esselin about the war on reality. He's author of his latest book called Sex and the Unreal City, The Demolition of the Western Mind. What is spectral thinking, and how has it taken over our view of ourselves? We'll answer that question next.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Memoria Press exists to promote and impart the classical heritage of the Christian West through an emphasis on the liberal arts and the great works of the Western tradition. The Memoria Press curriculum encourages the development of wisdom and virtue through the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR22. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. memoriapress.com.
Criticism.
I just had to call in to respond to this week's installment of Never Trump Drivel from Terry Mattingly.
Compliments.
I love the interviews and insights because they help me battle the slings and arrows of outrageous theology in practice.
Clarification.
Is there a point where, without baptism, infants go to heaven, and after which time they go to hell if they're not baptized?
The Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Anthony Esslin is our guest, professor and writer in residence at Magdalen College of the Liberal Arts and senior editor of Touchstone Magazine. We're talking about the war on reality. Dr. Esslin, in your book, you talk about spectral thinking. What is it, and how has it taken over our view of ourselves?
Well, yeah, it's as if we were ghosts in the machine, to pick up a phrase from Cartesian philosophy, the philosophy of Descartes, the era that that kind of dualism has spawned, right? It's as if myself, whatever that self is some free-floating, immaterial idea, not fundamentally connected to my body, not connected to the created world either. And people who are materialists will even talk this way, as if their body was one thing, but the self, the authentic self, was something else. Christians should never talk that way, okay? We are body, soul, unities. There's nothing in the Hebrew Old Testament that suggests that yourself is a kind of specter that floats about the world and uses the body as a tool, but otherwise can be seen as quite distinct from the body. There's nothing in Hebrew thinking that leads us that way. And Christian thinking doesn't go in that way either. That would be a mistake, okay? Why, it flies in the face of the goodness of the created world and the incarnation of the Word. We believe that the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. We don't believe that the second person of the Trinity kind of inhabited a body in the way that, let's say, Satan used a serpent as a kind of utensil, a machine that he could manipulate from inside, but otherwise was not a serpent at all. Satan was not a serpent, but just using serpent as a sock puppet. We don't believe that about Christ. He was fully human. He was real flesh. There's no Christ's body over here and his self somewhere floating over there. Body and soul are together in a single person. So we've got to stop that kind of thinking. It's nonsense thinking. It leads us to what my friend Robert George calls self-body dualism. And it's in error. Leads us in all kinds of bad ways. And frankly, young people are filled with confusion because they can't see their bodies as themselves. They end up abstracting themselves from their bodies and using the body as a machine for procuring pleasure. Well, not really fully human that way.
You have written a previous book about boyhood and its disintegration. Talk about how that disintegration occurred.
It occurred largely because of goodwill in a mistaken cause and evil will. Goodwill in a mistaken cause might go like this. You'd say, well, look, you know what? We've treated boys as if they were better than girls, better to have a son than to have a daughter. And we've given boys a lot of opportunities that we haven't given to our girls, and that hasn't been fair, right? So we need to open up these opportunities for girls too, right? That point of view is understandable. It was in some measure mistaken, because we don't need the same things from boys as we need from girls and vice versa. And a lot of the institutions that we had that gave boys these supposedly special opportunities were not so much opportunities, but dire necessities. We're talking about things that the boys, as boys, in order to become good men, really needed, could not do without. Okay, and so we've largely denied them these things. So, for instance, every culture known to man, the boys have been at some age separated from the girls and the women, sometimes totally separated, sometimes just for certain activities, right? So that they could form dynamic all-male groups, they'd learn from each other, and they could do things without the pressing need to show off in front of girls and without the competition for the attention of girls. So they build these strong male bonds that would serve them well and would serve the common good. This is the backbone of every all-male team, and we can look to armies, guilds, other professional organizations, beneficent organizations, right? Men getting together to see to it that something good that profits everybody gets done. Often something very dangerous, something hazardous, like building a bridge, building the Brooklyn Bridge, or, you know, throwing a 15-mile-long trestle over the Great Salt Lake, you know, things that have to be done that can only be done by men in teams. And you raise boys so that they could fit into these activities, that could be strong and learn from each other. So we denied them that partly because we had a funny kind of guilty conscience prompted by a wrong idea of equality, a mistaken idea of equality. But then on the other side, there were plenty of people who said, listen, we don't even care if the boys thrive with these institutions. We don't care. That was the point of view of the Supreme Court of Mrs. Ginsburg, who died recently, and Justice Breyer, when they forced VMI to go co-ed. Testimony by the VMI president said, you know, this is an institution that is really needed for certain kinds of young men. They thrive here, you know. And Breyer said, well, so what? So what? So what, right? Well, that so what attitude, and worse, right? We know that the boys thrive. Therefore, we're going to deny them it because we really want to hold them back. That's actually quite evil, right? So I mean, between one and the other, we've denied boys what they need. And I think a cursory look at the cultures of the world would show that this is a very grave error. This is unfair to them. You know what it'd be like? It is as if you knew that boys, because of the bodies they have, needed a certain vitamin, okay, to make them strong. We'll call it vitamin M for masculine. But you knew that if they got this vitamin, in some important ways, they would do things that the girls would not do. They would build the Brooklyn Bridge. Let's just take that as an exemplar, okay? They build the Brooklyn Bridge. And you deliberately deny them that, even though you know they need it, just because you don't want them to shine in any way, right? Because you've got this ideological commitment to sexual indifference and equality wrongly understood. That's evil, right? That's evil. We've got to reject that. I mean, the churches, my church, Roman Catholic, right? My church has, in the United States, to be kind of blunt about it, not given a damn about boys for about 40 years, maybe longer, right? And the results are in. The boys lose interest. They grow up without the church, and then they raise families without the church. The Lutherans must see this too, right? You lose the boys. You lose them as men, then you're going to lose their wives, you're going to lose their children too. And eventually, church is nothing but a hobby for old ladies, and then the old ladies die off, and you sell your church to a bunch of Muslims for a mosque. And the Muslims don't make this mistake. Anyway, yeah, we're completely unrealistic when it comes to boys, and actually ungrateful and mean-spirited. You know they would thrive if you give them this. But you don't give it to them.
Up next in our conversation with Dr. Anthony Esselin about the war on reality, we'll talk about the 1965 Supreme Court decision, Griswold versus Connecticut, contraception, and how it advanced unreality. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When Martin Luther preached the dedication for the Torgau Church, he asserted that nothing else happened in this house but that our dear Lord speak to us and we respond in prayer, thanksgiving, and praise.
Issues Etc. guest Dr. John Pless.
The same could be said of Concordia Theological Seminary. This is a place where our Lord speaks to us through His Word, and we respond in joyful and thankful confession. We therefore invite you to visit our campus, where the Word of Christ dwells among us richly.
Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu or 1-800-481-2155. We're talking to Dr. Anthony Esselin about the war on reality. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. This week's auction items to benefit our new studios and offices: the Issues Etc. listener and guest phone system from our old studio. You can place your bid by sending an email to lynn@issuesetc.org or by calling Lynn at 618-223-8385. We'll update you on the bidding Wednesday and announce the winner on Friday. Dr. Esselin, what role did the 1965 Supreme Court decision, Griswold v. Connecticut, that removed government restrictions on contraception, what role did it play in the rise of unreality?
Yeah, okay, so that may be the root of so much of our misery now, not the later decision, which was bloody, the Roe versus Wade decision, but Griswold versus Connecticut. There's a little backstory to this. The Connecticut law that these, I believe they were two gay men, shouldn't have even had standing in the case, brought suit against the state for, was a so-called Comstock law. And those laws were so named across the country because they were inspired by a man named Anthony Comstock, who went about the country fighting against pornography and public obscenity, and also fighting against contraceptive devices. There wasn't a pill back then. We're talking about the 1890s and then the turn of the century. Comstock understood, and so did progressives at the time, believe it or not. There were such things as progressives who were Christians still, who understood that if you undermine marriage and the family, you will cause all kinds of havoc for everybody, especially for the poor. Okay, so because they understood that your individual over there and you're buying this, this dirty book from that individual over there. It's not just a matter of individuals, but of the common good and of our life together. They all understood that. And so they went along with Comstock's crusade. And in fact, he was one of the most popular men in the country. He was praised by people in both parties, right? Well, so everything changed, and by the mid-60s, people didn't want to hear about that anymore. They wanted to do what they wanted to do, as if it didn't have any effect on anybody else. It's as if you're shacking up over here has no influence whatsoever upon the rest of your neighborhood. And they began to strike down all the Comstock laws around the country. They did this soon after the contraceptive pill was invented. And the pill allows you to pretend that sexual congress between man and woman is not fundamentally the child-making thing, and therefore, just forget about all other considerations of theology. Because it is the child-making thing, it should be reserved to men and women in marriage, because a child ought to be born to people who are committed to each other for life, so that the child will have a strong web of relationships extending back in time to grandparents, other generations, and forward in time, right? Everybody understood back in the old days, everybody understood what that was all about. But now we could pretend that sexual congress was just the rubbing of one body against another for hedonistic ends, just for the pleasure of it, for recreation. A sweating off kind of activity, you know, frustrating day at work, so go find a woman and do this. That was unreal. Now, the Supreme Court, in order to justify it, had to pretend that the Constitution has something to say about marriage and sexuality. Well, the Constitution has nothing to say about that. The founders would have found it appalling that a Supreme Court would intrude on such matters, because these are matters that are in the competence of ordinary people and their representatives, not a bunch of lawyers. So the Supreme Court had to pretend that there was a constitution, which there wasn't, a sort of free-floating constitution, that's whatever we want it to mean on whatever day we're talking about. That's what constitution that we have right now is a complete fiction. And they had to pretend that the decision was all about the sanctity of marriage, because far be it that the state should intrude upon the holy inner sanctum of a man and a woman married. Okay. Now, anybody with a working brain cell or two would have understood the response. Justice Douglas, the silly opinion here that you've got, it's precisely because we believe that marriage is holy, that we believe that the pill threatens it, just as other contraceptive devices threatened it 60 years ago when Anthony Comstock was fighting to have these laws passed in states around the country. But of course, that business about marriage was just see-through lingerie. It didn't matter. The Supreme Court, after that point, never bothered to remember that it justified that decision because of the sanctity of marriage. Very soon after that, you had the Lee Marvin case, the so-called palimony case, in which marriage was forgotten entirely. All you had to do to be deserving of alimony was to have shacked up with a guy for some years. And in Roe versus Wade, there's not only no whisperings about the sanctity of marriage, the father of the child, even if he's the husband of the woman who wants the abortion, has no say in the matter whatsoever. Where did this sanctity go? Well, you know, it was just rhetorical. Well, it was rhetorical nighty, whipped up there for that particular decision and then forgotten. And now, of course, nothing. Absolutely nothing that the Supreme Court decides upon has any concern whatsoever for what we have done to marriage in the last 60 years. Nothing.
How does abortion demonstrate our culture's sad dedication to unreality?
Oh, well, you know, sin makes us stupid, right? It's one of the, all the poets, all the Christian poets understood this, right? You fall into sin. Don't think that your mind and your ability to reason is going to be left intact. You're going ultimately to become a fool, to become an idiot. And this is certainly the case with abortion, right? So I'll give you an example. So we know, right, that the developing child in the womb is human, okay? It's not bovine. It's not equine. It's human, right? But we have to, now we have to pretend that it's not human. It's not human yet. I don't know when it becomes human, but it's not human yet. Well, what is it then? Oh, well, then we're supposed to pretend that it's a parasite. But a parasite is of a different species than the host. Parasite enters the host by invasion, not by anything the host does. The parasite is not the natural result of something good, something even necessary that the host does, right? Parasite's simply an invader of a different species, and it hurts the host. This is what we say about human beings in order to ignore the uncomfortable fact that we're killing our own children. We would never say about a dog. If you see a dog, a female dog, walking down the street with a swollen belly, nobody says, oh, the dog has parasites. Everybody says, that dog's going to have puppies, right? We would not say about puppies what we say about the fetus in order to justify killing it because it's not convenient for us. And then they say, well, it's just a part of the mother. Well, no, it's not a part of the mother at all. And this has been known for 160 years. Dr. Horatio Storer pointed it out. The fertilized egg, when it makes its way through the fallopian tubes, is not even attached to the mother. But it is alive. It is developing. It is self-organizing. It is entire. It's a whole thing. It's not a part like a thumb. And it's not even, for that time, it's not even attached, okay? So, I mean, that's nonsense. And then they said, well, it's just a clump of cells. A wart is a clump of cells. A wart is not an entire thing, and it is not an organized thing. It's somewhat amorphous. That's what makes it a clump. But the developing child is an organism. We all know this. This biological fact is not even controversial. It's an organism. It's an entirety, okay? But we have to pretend in all of these ways because what we really want is what we want. I don't want to have a kid. Of course, I've already engaged in unreality because I pretended that what I was doing was not the child-making thing. Now that I've made a child, I am going to pretend that it's not a child so that I can get rid of it. It's one unreality heaped on another. And it's thoroughly corrupted our politics. You can almost not talk about these things without being shouted down by people enraged. And the rage is all the greater because the reality is really quite clear.
We're talking about the war on reality on this Monday, October the 12th. Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest, author of the book Sex in the Unreal City, The Demolition of the Western Mind. When we come back, the political realm is eminently the realm of the unreal. We'll find out why.
If you plan on doing some online Christmas shopping with Amazon, you can also help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to smile.amazon.com, sign into your Amazon account, enter Lutheran Public Radio into the charitable organization search field, and click Select. A percentage of your purchase will be donated to Issues Etc. Smile.amazon.com and choose Lutheran Public Radio. Thanks for your support.
Usually in the Lutheran Witness, we have a theme for the issue. Well, the November issue of the Lutheran Witness brings you something unique. We have broken the mold, done something new. Well, not all that new in the world of magazines. We have brought you a magazine that does not have a theme. We asked our readers to submit articles, and from the 72 articles that were submitted, we culled it down to the 7 best articles that help you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective. So to get your copy, visit cph.org/witness or our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Concordia University, Wisconsin is a Lutheran higher education community committed to helping students develop in mind, body, and spirit for service to Christ in the church and in the world. Concordia seeks a postdoctoral researcher to participate in the LIGO experiment and streamline the discovery of multi-messenger astrophysical events. This position requires a PhD in physics or astronomy, computational experience, and an interest in Concordia's mission. Find more information at cuw.applicantpro.com/jobs.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? Please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.
The Church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to rightly seat us.
The 21st century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the war on reality. Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest. He's professor and writer in residence at Magdalen College of the Liberal Arts, senior editor of Touchstone Magazine, and author of the book Sex and the Unreal City, The Demolition of the Western Mind. Dr. Esselin, you say that the political realm is eminently the realm of the unreal. What do you mean?
Well, when I look at I collect literary magazines, and this is not highfalutin stuff. These are the most popular magazines in the country from 1880, 1890. And they often publish political articles. And I'm struck, first of all, I'm struck by how literate they are, but also how flat-footed and temperate and careful they are. That is, you got some political issue to deal with. It's got many angles to it. You got to look at it carefully. You can't just pronounce upon it, And politics is always a realm of demagoguery and posing and mere appearances that always threatens in politics. But, I could show people all kinds of articles in which authors are trying to hold that temptation at bay and really look at something in all of its often awkward, cumbersome, multitudinous details, right? Well, we don't have the patience for any of that. We hardly have the patience to read a decent essay. Instead, we are fed images on screen, little slogans. We live almost entirely by the slogan. So politics, which always, in the best of circumstances, threatens to become mere show, is now almost completely show. Okay? We can't have a grown-up conversation about any important topic in this country. It's not possible. We're going to have that conversation. Who are you going to have it with? Can we talk, for instance, about the fact that over a third, almost 40% of children in the United States are born out of wedlock and what this does to these kids. Can we have that conversation? No, we can't. Somebody is going to start shouting and screaming, conversational shutdown. Can you have a conversation about anything important on a college campus? On my college campus, you could, because we're a faithful Catholic school, Magdalene College of the Liberal Arts. You know, check us out. And I'm sure there are still solid Lutheran schools. We can have these conversations, right? But most places you can't. You would be regarded immediately as somebody who is filled with hatred. There'd be a lot of shouting and demonstrating and maybe calls for you to be fired if you're a teacher or to be expelled if you're a student. That's it. No conversations possible. But we don't even really want to have the conversations because that would mean difficult encounters with reality. And we have not the patience for it and not the intellectual habits for it, not the emotional makeup that it requires. We are given to, I'll coin a word here, hysterionics, the posing of hysteria. Just someone will shout, someone will start crying, and that's it. No discussion possible.
What is the spirituality of unreality?
Oh, gosh. Sometimes I think of it as it's as if we're standing in a spiritual crater, and you think that eventually you'll hit a bottom, but it doesn't happen. The floor always cracks and falls from beneath you, and you fall even farther and farther. You fall farther and farther into madness, into unreality. This really requires a miracle of God to turn a person around, to turn a nation around. I think of it as fundamentally hellish. All evil is a turn towards non-existence, towards non-being, a denial of reality. That's why Jesus says of Satan that he is a murderer and a liar from the beginning. He is the liar and the father of lies, right? It points to the anti-creation that evil is. Evil can't do anything on its own. It can only destroy, it can only try to undo. Satan in Paradise Lost says, when he's out of hell and the other devils aren't overhearing him, he can for a moment or two admit something that he could not admit in public. And he says, you know, he's not out of hell. Myself am hell, he says. And in the lowest deep, a lower deep still threatening to devour me opens wide, to which the hell I suffer seems a heaven. So there'll be no end to the falling into non-being, into insanity and wickedness to Satan. There's no floor to it. And there won't be for us either without conversion.
In that vein, and finally, Dr. Esselin, with just about a minute, coming back to where we began, how is the Trinitarian faith the reality that we need in an age of unreality?
Well, I end the book with a chapter that's headed by the Apostles' Creed. And I detail in that chapter, it's a surprise to people, I never expected that, detail in that chapter just what each statement that we say in the Apostles' Creed, what implications that has for reality. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. As soon as we say that, okay, we are making a claim that God is the Father of all that is real. And if we reject reality, we reject him, the creator. And if we treat his creation as if it was mere material, mere stuff, then we have treated his gift with ingratitude. And that's the fundamental way in which Satan's pride is expressed. Pride as ingratitude.
Dr. Anthony Esselin is professor and writer in residence at Magdalene College of the Liberal Arts. He's senior editor of Touchstone Magazine, author of several books, including his latest, Sex and the Unreal City, The Demolition of the Western Mind. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org, click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. Esselin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Up next, we'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the three-year lectionary, talking with Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about Jesus' teaching on paying taxes to Caesar in Matthew chapter 22. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.